Just 3 days earlier, I had seen my father walking slowly from work, his hard hat under his arm, and his long face was sweating from the hot afternoon sun. I was sitting on the veranda. I had not seen him for a while, as another stepmother had destroyed our relationship again. But that morning, my father smiled at me as he came up the steps. He examined my face, and his lips were about to utter something when my stepmother came out. He looked away, then at my stepmother, who pretended not to see me. They quietly went into the parlor. I held back my tears and left the veranda to meet with Junior at the junction where we waited for the lorry. We were on our way to see our mother in the next town about 3 miles away. When our father had paid for our school, we had seen her on weekends over the holidays when we were back home. Now that he refused to pay, we visited her every 2 or 3 days. That afternoon, we met mother at the market and walked with her as she purchased ingredients to cook for us. Her face was dull at first, but as soon as she hugged us, she brightened up. She told us that our little brother, Ibrahim, was at school and that we would go get him on our way from the market. She held our hands as we walked, and every so often she would turn around as if to see whether we were still with her. As we walked to our little brother's school, mother turned to us and said, "I am sorry I do not have enough money to put you boys back in school at this point. I am working on it." She paused and then asked, "How is your father these days?" "He seems all right. I saw him this afternoon," I replied. Junior didn't say anything. Mother looked at him directly in the eyes and said, "Your father is a good man and he loves you very much. He just seems to attract the wrong stepmothers for you boys." When we got to the school, our little brother was in the yard playing soccer with his friends. He was 8 and pretty good for his age. As soon as he saw us, he came running, throwing himself on us. He measured himself against me to see if he had gotten taller than me. Mother laughed. My little brother's small round face glowed, and sweat formed around the creases he had on his neck, just like my mother's. All 4 of us walked to mother's house. I held my little brother's hand, and he told me about school and challenged me to a soccer game later in the evening. My mother was single and devoted herself to taking care of Ibrahim. She said he sometimes asked about our father. When Junior and I were away in school, she had taken Ibrahim to see him a few times, and each time she had cried when my father hugged Ibrahim, because they were both so happy to see each other. My mother seemed lost in her thoughts, smiling as she relived the moments. 2 days after that visit, we had left home. As we now stood at the wharf in Matrujong, I could visualize my father holding his hard hat and running back home from work, and my mother weeping and running to my little brother's school. A sinking feeling overtook me. Junior Taloi and I jumped into a canoe and sadly waved to our friends as the canoe pulled away from the shores of Matrujong. As we landed on the other side of the river, more and more people were arriving in haste. We started walking, and a woman carrying her flip-flops on her head spoke without looking at us. "Too much blood has been spilled where you are going. Even the good spirits have fled from that place." She walked past us. In the bushes along the river, the strained voices of women cried out, "Gwogbomumao, God help us," and screamed the names of their children, "Yusufu, Jabu, Fode." We saw children walking by themselves, shirtless, in their underwear, following the crowd. "Nyanjeo, Nyakekeo." My mother, my father, the children were crying. There were also dogs running in between the crowds of people who were still running, even though far away from home. The dogs sniffed the air, looking for their owners. My veins tightened. We had walked 6 miles and were now at Kabati, grandmother's village. It was deserted. All that was left were footprints in the sand leading toward the dense forest that spread out beyond the village. As evening approached, people started arriving from the mining area. Their whispers, the cries of little children seeking lost parents and tired of walking, and the wails of hungry babies replaced the evening songs of crickets and birds. We sat on grandmother's veranda, waiting and listening. "Do you guys think it is a good idea to go back to Mogbemo?" Junior asked. But before either of us had a chance to answer, a Volkswagen roared in the distance, and all the people walking on the road ran into the nearby bushes. We ran too, but didn't go that far. My heart pounded and my breathing intensified. The vehicle stopped in front of my grandmother's house. and from where we lay we could see that whoever was inside the car was not armed. As we and others emerged from the bushes, we saw a man run from the driver's seat to the sidewalk, where he vomited blood. His arm was bleeding. When he stopped vomiting, he began to cry. It was the first time I had seen a grown man cry like a child, and I felt a sting in my heart. A woman put her arms around the man and begged him to stand. He got to his feet and walked toward the van. When he opened the door opposite the driver's, a woman who was leaning against it fell to the ground. Blood was coming out of her ears. People covered the eyes of their children.